At $200, a Super Nintendo setup costs twice as much as the old system. For the money, the company promises better pictures, sound, and adventure. Now you're playing with power, superpower.
You're the king, I tell you! You're king!
Only for Super NES.
You're listening to the SNES Podcast with your host, Soul Blazer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Super NES Podcast, episode number 201. I am Greg. He is Joe.
Hi.
And we're coming at you this time with a flame of pick that Joe wanted us to cover. First of all, many thanks to all of you for your patience with the delay in releasing the 200th episode of the podcast, the special wrapped episode we did with everybody. It was a lot of work to, obviously, it was a lot of work to get that podcast edited. So we appreciate the patience, while that episode got released because of the holidays and whatnot, late things. And also, speaking about the holidays, we're going to be taking a mini break after this podcast again for the holidays. So this is the last episode that we're recording in 2022. And Joe, maybe in January we can do another recap episode of this year. Later we'll do that again.
Yeah, we can do that.
But anyway, we're finishing this year on a perhaps high note. I don't know. I'm not sure what Joe thinks about this game yet. But Joe, what do you want to cover this episode, and why do you want to cover it?
All right. So I saw this very interesting game on a YouTube channel. Shout out to SNES Drunk. You should definitely check him out and give him a subscribe. He puts out good content. But he covered a game called Skull Jaeger. I believe that's correct.
Yes.
Believe that's how it is said. Until I am corrected, that is how I'm going to pronounce it. and it looked like it was a pretty cool game. It had pretty cool box art. I was hooked. I was like, I'm in. I want to see how this goes. SNES Drunk wasn't too favorable on it. He did mention the story, which I'm sure that we'll get into.
Yes.
But, yeah, this was one of those, like, I saw it, and I was like, you know what? Like, this hasn't been covered before. This is an oddity, and we all know that I like odd and obscure games. So this was, like, right up my alley, and I was like, you know what? I was like, background environments looked good. Gameplay through the video at least looked decent. So, hey, you know, let's give it a shot. Ran it by Greg. Greg was cool with it. And here we are.
Yeah. It's an oddity for a few reasons. Not because of the game itself, because the game itself is a pretty typical action platformer game.
Yeah.
But because it's one of the things that the game features for sure. So, which we'll get into here in just a moment. But yeah, I remember. You obviously had never played this game before, right?
No, I had never heard of it. I had never played it before, so I had no experience with this game.
Yeah, I remember playing this game as a rental back when it was new.
Okay.
So, having it for a weekend. So that's my experience with the game. I've not played it since then. So, So the full title of this game, is Skull Jaeger, the Revolt of the Westkins. So, this was a game that came out only in North America, October 1992, when it got released. It was developed by Realtime Associates. We've already covered before this podcast. Realtime Associates is, because they're still around today, a very experienced group of programmers who got their start programming for the television way back when in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So Realtime's done a lot of games over the years. It was published by a company called American Software Corporation, more commonly abbreviated as ASC. They were around from 1992 to 2000. They primarily published games for the NES, Super NES, and the Genesis, with a few games also for Windows and PlayStation as well too. Nothing really too extraordinary, for their published games. They're pretty, average publisher. They ported Grand Theft Auto to computers. They released the They released the well, we'll have to cover this game eventually, Joe, because at the very least, though, it is unique. They released fishing games for the Super NES.
Okay.
TNN Bash Tournaments of Champions and TNN Outdoor Pro Hunter.
Hmm.
Sanitarium for computers was kind of like a cult hit.
Oh, I love Sanitarium. How did I not know these guys did Sanitarium?
that's probably the most like famous game that they probably have done.
That makes sense. Yeah,
but as publisher, mind you, they didn't actually develop the game. They just published it.
Right, but so, they still got my money, so that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. They finally went bankrupt 2000 because they were trying to because the development costs like one of their games. Have you heard of the old the role playing game called Werewolf the Apocalypse?
No.
By Werewolf Publishing?
No.
Yeah, that's an old role playing game module which had card games, novels, computer games, etc.
Okay. So,
they were developing a game for that franchise, and their franchise would suck all their money out, and they eventually went bankrupt trying to develop it. So, this game, like I said before, is a pretty typical 2D platformer action game. There's a total of like a five worlds. Five worlds, like, you know, various stages in those worlds. Seven worlds, if that's how many there is in this game. So, boss fights at the end of every stage, etc. So, since you have an experience with this game, Joe, I'm curious to hear your impressions like about the gameplay and how this game, how this game like looked and played to you.
So I really enjoyed like the background graphics. Like the backgrounds I thought were beautiful. Especially when you put this into context. This is October of 92.
Yes.
Like this is still early in the Super Nintendo's life. And for that alone, like this game's pretty impressive. I felt like the sprites could have been worked a little bit more. Like, I think if this had maybe another 6 months to be able to fine-tune it, I think this could have been a fantastic game. That being said, to me, this was just mediocre. I felt the music was great. I felt the graphics were eh. Like, the backgrounds were fantastic. But I really felt like the main character, Storm, and the enemies, their sprites were just kind of, I don't know, they weren't up to the same par as those backgrounds were. Those backgrounds were great. And even like some of the illustrations in like the manual was great. And the very first, title screen, there was a lot of potential there. And I just feel like they only... whether it was because they were rushed or they, just didn't feel they needed to put that much effort in, or it was because maybe if they put more effort in, it would have caused slowdown. I don't know. But it really just feels like they put a lot of effort into that splash screen, into the backgrounds. But then when it came to the generic sprites, like they just kind of, did what they did, and they were like, well, it works. Let's go.
Yeah, so as far as the graphics go, I agree with you for the most part about that. I think the background graphics are very detailed and lush. They look great. I do appreciate the fact that sprites are big, because a lot of games like this, the sprites of the enemies and player characters can be like very small. So I do appreciate how big the sprites are, and the sprites do have a detail to them. I think they are very well detailed. But you're right. Graphically, they don't look the sprites don't look as good as the rest of the game does.
Yeah, I don't know. They just don't feel as sharp to me. If that makes sense.
Yeah. No. I definitely agree with that. So, The music in this game, like you said, is very good. I think it's the exactly very good soundtrack. It's very appropriate for the game. It's a very very frantic, fast-paced action soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So I do think the music fits very well. The game has support for either one player or two players who play alternately. And there's a password feature you can use in the game for passwords. So there are a few interesting wrinkles in this game as far as gameplay goes. For example, you have the whole gem system, the system which are called gemeralds.
Yeah.
In this game, so how the gems work is pretty interesting. Do you want to take a shot, Joe, trying to explain how the gems work?
All right. So if I remember correctly. Because of course I didn't write everything down. There's four types of gems. You have the red ones, which you can collect up to three, which cause you to basically fling fireballs from your sword.
Yes, a must have.
Yeah, it's absolutely a must have. And in my opinion, I love the idea. Like this is like your Super Mario mushroom, where it gives you that extra hit point.
Right, yep. So
And then you got your green gems. Those you can collect for an extra life. They're basically your coins. And you know, I'm using the analogy of Mario because that's the easiest way to explain it. Then you have blue ones, which will increase your time that you have to get through the level. And then there are giant blue gems, which will either indicate the end of the map or a checkpoint throughout the level.
Yes. Yep. Exactly.
And all of those give you an extra hit point. So think of it like if you have multiple green gems as well as multiple red gems, you have at least three hits before you're dead, which is a good thing in this game because sometimes those hit boxes are a little bit wonky.
Yeah. The hits. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm actually going to talk about that in a moment. I'll just finish up real quick here of the hit points. The hit points in the game is interesting because it's like, if you get hit, you lose all your red gems. If you get hit and don't have any red gems, your red gems, they lose all your green gems.
Yep.
If you get hit with don't have either, then you lose a life. So it's a very interesting hit system. So because I can't think of a game exactly quite like this one as far as how hit points are decided. Mm. So I like it in some aspects, but I'd rather. But honestly, I'd rather the game just did what most platformers game did and just give you a hit bar instead, because I think that'd be like more fair.
Yeah, I also feel like they shouldn't have taken all the gems when you get hit.
Yeah,
I think that was a little extreme. But also, like, you know,
I'm not a big fan. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Sonic either. How it does things either we like, you know, we like lose, you know,
yeah.
we like lose rings they get hit either. So I'm not a so.
Yeah, no, and at least there, like with Sonic, you have a chance to at least collect some of those rings back. So
you do,
this way,
yes,
you know, it's not like an instant death. Here, like, I don't know. I feel like I get it. Like, okay, I don't have any red gems, so you hit me and I lose all my green gems. Well, since the green gems equal an extra life, that makes sense if I lose all those. But if I have three red gems, I shouldn't lose them all with one hit. Like, one per level, like, you know what I mean? That be your three hit points. Is, you know, the red gems that you pick up, and then if those are gone and you lose all your green ones, you die. That would make sense to me. But I also understand from playing the game why they didn't do that, because I feel like it would make the game too easy.
Right.
The game's, you know, got a decent difficulty. It's not extremely hard, but it's not like super easy either. And I feel like if they went the conventional route, as you know, I was just discussing for hit points and whatnot, I think it would have made the game too easy. And you know, maybe, I mean, I can't say soured the experience because I don't know how many people actually played this game and you know whatnot when it was released. But you know, obviously today, looking in hindsight, we can say these things. But for the time, I think overall this was pretty decent and. Honestly, that's not even the strangest thing with this game.
So, do you think the strangest thing in this game is what we're going to talk about next? The bubblegum system?
Oh, so I don't even think it's the bubblegum system. So the bubblegum system is great. I love the idea of, like, for one, the names of the different bubblegums, which are the power-ups in this game.
Yes.
Chef's Kiss, perfect. Ah, perfect. You have Snap Cherry, which can allow you to fly. Westigan, whatever, Westigan, orange, which, will let you, like, lob grenades. Then you have Sea Purple, which makes you invincible for a bit. And then Island Lime, which is a screen clearing power up, which you turn into a globby ball and just, like, go bouncing around. It's fantastic.
The bubblegum system is definitely one of the more unique things about this game.
Yeah, so, like, okay, definitely... so, like, we haven't really pointed, you know, at this aspect yet, but, like, this game advertises itself with the cover and the story and everything else. This is, like, a pirate game. And this is what you
mostly
expect.
Yes, yeah.
Is that this is a pirate game. Spoiler, if you read the 80-page manual that explains a whole bunch of exposition, but also gives some subtle hints to things in the game.
Yep, we're going to talk about that later on, for sure. So, but
you find out that this game actually doesn't involve any pirates at all.
No.
So, I would have loved to seen, like, the marketing at the time for this game, because I went looking and I couldn't find, like, commercials, I couldn't find, like, magazine advertisements for this game. So, I just feel like they released this into the world and were just like, good luck.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a small publisher. So, like, you know, they wrote they probably didn't have the money to be able to invest in that kind of stuff. The game did get magazine adverts, but that's about it. So, but the bubblegum system, I definitely agree with you, you know, about the bubblegum system. The bubblegum system is definitely unique, and it's like a very, like, fun aspect of this game for sure. Mm. So, what did you think was the most unique thing about this game then, Joe?
So the most unique thing is the thing that you're supposed to be able to figure out by reading the manual. So there's up to...
Oh, hidden zones.
Yes, there's up to 70 hidden zones in this game. So Greg had messaged me and said, you know, make sure you read the manual. And I'm just like, okay. Like, I know there's an 80-page story there. So, like, I get it. Like, you want me to read the story. Now, I read the story. I more or less, like, grazed over it, because starting to read it, I was just like, it's not a bad story, but it's also, like, not fantastic. So, I was, like, half-ass reading the story. So, anyways, I get into gameplay, and, I'm in, like, the first section. You go down, there's some barrels, so I grab a couple gems. So, I get my first green gem, I get my first red gem. And then, like, there's, like, a smaller barrel on, like, one of the platforms on the bottom. And I don't know what I did. Don't ask. I have no idea. I can't answer the question. But I did something over one of these barrels, and I just suddenly, like, was spinning in a black void, and then I ended up on this new level. And apparently this is one of the hidden levels. And it had skulls all in the background, which, I mean, I was already talking about how great they did on the backgrounds in the initial game. But the secret stages are even better with the skulls and everything else. And then, like, these lizard men came out, like, totally threw me off because of, you know, like, totally different than what I was dealing with in the level I was in. It's such a weird experience. But it was like... it happened so randomly. Like, I thought I broke something. And, like, it was only after, like, you know, that had happened. Like, of course, I went looking. Like, why the hell did I randomly show up in this level? And, I stumbled upon an article on... it looks like someone's, like, old blog from, like, the early 2000s. But, like, they were talking about how, like, in the manual, it explains, like, certain things... that, you know, will actually give you hints to objects and things where you can be over them And if you
the manual doesn't actually say too much about it. It just about it. Like it just says, quote, you can find certain objects. Like all the manual says about the bonus areas is like, quote, there are secret bizarre looking sections of the game you can find by picking up certain objects or by standing in certain spots and pressing L, R, up and down buttons in different combinations.
Right.
That's all it says. So, but.
So anyways, I somehow must have hit like the L and the R button. That's the only thing I can think of because like it happened to me that one time. That's the only time it happened to me. I don't know how many of the secret rooms levels you found, but that was the only one I found.
I found about a dozen. Some of the areas, you just find randomly. Other areas, there are hints in hints in the story as to where to find them, what you need to do to find where to find them.
Okay.
And they are good to find because they're good to find because they're loaded up with like gems and whatnot. And you can't be hurt if you hit by the enemy in a fantasy zone. You can bounce back to the regular game. There's also a few battle perspective change areas where you can direct control cannons and that cannons and shooting at the screen per se. So they do make some use of mode 7 in this game, which is nice to see. But as far as the actual game, the gameplay itself goes, going back to what we were saying earlier, Joe, the game plays fine, but I do think you're right about the hitboxes. The hitboxes do tend to be very small. Collision detection, I think, can be a bit wonky sometimes. And there was slowdown in this game. I did see some slowdown, like some areas.
So the only slowdown I really saw was on those special stages that are hidden. In the initial stages, going through the, the first area where, you go through the docks, and then you end up in like a wooden warehouse after that. And then you're like in like some little Spanish town soon after that. Like, I didn't find any slowdown in those levels or anything like that. It was only the secret level that I found there was some slowdown. And I'm wondering if that actually has something to do with like the backgrounds and how more complex they are in those special stages. That's the only thing I can think of. But
yeah, it could be.
Also, like, how crazy, I mean, it's already crazy because you got, like, those weird, like, robot-looking guys, but then, like, how is it that, like, when you're in the Spanish town, like, suddenly, like, I know they're ninjas, but because I know it's a Spanish town, I'm gonna call them luchadors, just come jumping out at you? Like, it's so random.
There is a good variety of enemies in this game. Like, we'll give it that
much. I love the variety. It's like, sounds like I'm crapping on it, but it's not me crapping on it. Like, this is, like, fantastic in all the right ways.
Right. Yep, exactly. So, and I think you're right about the difficulty. The difficulty of the game is, it's a pretty hard game. I wouldn't say it's the hardest platformer I've played, but it definitely is more up there than like an average platformer as far as difficulty goes.
Yeah, like I found the first level, the first boss is like the big bad that you have on the cover. Like, I was like so surprised to see him as the first boss. And like, as long as you got your 3 gems and you can throw those 3 projectiles, like, he goes down pretty easy.
Yeah.
And, that surprised me. I didn't expect it to be that easy. But then, like, in the second world or level or whatever, chapters is what they call them. In the second chapter, like, the boss is like a giant rat. And that rat will mess you up. I died twice trying to fight the rat, but the island lime, that power-up worked perfect for that rat. I was able to use that and just kept bouncing around him, and he eventually died. But, like, it's just things like that. Like, it's the platforming, the levels themselves aren't bad. It's the bosses where I found the most difficulty, where it spikes, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. Some of the boss fights are definitely the most difficult part of the game for sure. Yeah. So I do appreciate the fact. I also appreciate the fact that this game gives you like 5 lives to start with.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
And the checkpoints are generous enough.
Yeah. And also, you start off with 5 lives, but let's be real. Like, there's enough green gems around where, like, you're getting, you know, 1 or 2 lives per stage easy.
Sure.
So, in an average, you know, chapter, which is about 3 or 4 levels, if you don't include the boss, you can get, you know, 2 or 3 lives built up. So,
sure.
You know, exactly. There's room for error for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure, definitely. I agree with that. So, I guess the last part of the game to talk about, which we haven't gotten to yet, is going to be the manual, because definitely the story of the manual was definitely one of the most unique things about this game. It's like most platformer games have a very basic story, and that's it. It's like, you know, there's like, you know, like a few paragraphs to talk about what's going on, they're doing this kind of stuff. Because I mean, it's a platform game. You're not playing the game for a rich story. You're playing the game. Like some like a frantic action based gameplay. So, but it's like they seem desperate to try to make this like a franchise. It's like, you know, they really thought they had something here where they're like, okay, we can start this, we can create this whole world with this whole story, this whole characters and whatnot, and maybe turn something else. I know I don't know what they wanted from it eventually. Maybe because the manual, they're so optimistic about it, the story ends like to be continued.
Yeah.
So they obviously had in mind either a sequel or a comic book or a TV show or something based upon all this, because go ahead.
I was gonna say I have a theory about this. So my theory is, and that's why it's got like the cool title with like the, you know, it's spelled SKU with the 2 dots above it, 1LJAGGER. This is so like early 90s, like cool, it's not even funny.
Definitely.
I think this was someone on the creation team either had a friend or it was themselves who had this idea. They wrote up the story. The idea was to probably publish this as a comic book based on the illustrations that are included, and I think it got shopped around and wasn't picked up and was basically told, look, like, this isn't gonna happen, we're not interested, nobody wants, you know, because like I said, it's very pirate-esque, even though it's not pirates, you know, nobody wants pirates in their comics and all this other stuff. Like, Marvel was, you know, superheroes in general were pretty big at the time. So, like, I could totally see, like, Superman died that summer. You know what I mean? Like, there were bigger things going on. And I think that this is, you know, this was a compromise. You know, we have this story. You know, we can't do what we want with it, but we can make a video game. And I believe that's how this all came about. And then they gave him the ability to write the manual, and he went all out.
Yeah. So it actually is a very like good story. Like, I mean, I think it's like, you know, I mean, like, is it a part of like comic books or comic books or like? No, not really. But as far as like a manual for story goes, the story is actually like, pretty good, because it is a very detailed story. It reads well. As I said before, there are there are hints. Clues in the story of like the five hidden locations in the game.
Yeah,
there are sections in the story where there's backwards text. You have to use a mirror to read. Mm-hmm. And the story does cover the events of the game pretty well. I mean, like, you know, the whole game story flows here from like beginning to end.
Yeah.
What you're doing in the game mirrors what happens to the story. So there is that. So there is that going forward in your favor.
And that's one thing I like, is that like the manual more or less gives you context, more context than what you're used to in a game.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So. But so it's like you don't need to read the story to the manual to be able to play this game and enjoy it. But it certainly does help your understanding of background. Plus, we want to find some of the hidden zones.
Yeah,
you definitely do that manual handy to locate some of them. So, and you're right. Like, you know, pirates were not really a big thing at this point yet, because Pirates of the Caribbean wasn't going to be out for another 10 years.
Right.
The story is just a basic fantasy slash, outworld story of this conquered kingdom, this tyrant ruler, a magical sword, people rising up in revolt, that kind of stuff. Right. So, and, I think you've seen it before, but the presentation of the story at least gets an A for effort, at least as far as that goes. So,
yeah, absolutely.
The story makes the game unique. The hit gauge and the bubblegum system definitely makes the game unique. Those things help elevate this game from your typical platformer game of the time period. But all in all, though, for a final conclusion, does it work? Yes and no, I think. I'm curious to hear your thoughts in a moment, Joe. But as far as me goes, there's very cool ideas in here. There's definitely some unique presentations and some gameplay ideas. It definitely gets an A for effort from me. The story's good to read. The gameplay works. The music's very good. The graphics are nice. But at the end of the day, this is just simply like an average platformer. Unfortunately, it's like all the window dressing in the world can't take away from the fact that at the end of the day, I really don't think there's too much in this game to elevate it above the other typical platformers on the system, which there are a lot of good platformers on the system. But I mean, it's not a bad game, but there definitely are platformers worse than this game for sure.
Yeah.
But it's a very middling game, and reviews at the time, we'll talk about reviews here in a moment, reviews at the time agreed with me on that. It's a very like middling game as far as that goes. It's worth playing the platformers platformers on the system for sure. But it's a relatively short game if you know what you're doing. The playthroughs online are less than an hour long. So it's like read the story, play the game a few times, and that's pretty much about it. Unfortunately, but so I think the slowdown hit detection problems, the problems, and just the average gameplay, plus the fantasy zones, while they're cool, there's so many of them, and some of them so hard to find that unless you're a completionist, you're written on anything encouraging you to take all the time and effort to find all whatever 70 plus
right.
zones that there are in this game anyway. So it's like, it's a fine game with admirable efforts and some good programming. But at the end of the day, I would love to see these ideas incorporated into a game that's better designed and polished. And I don't want the programmers per se, because Worktime Associates is a pretty good company. They know what they're doing. I think the combination of all this stuff just didn't work as well like they wanted it to work, unfortunately. So, yeah. At the end of the day, it's an interesting, unique game, but as far as gameplay goes, the best you can say about it is just average.
Yeah, and that's generally how I feel about this. It's not a great game, but like I said, it's not a bad game either. Actually, the funny thing is, while I was playing this game, it felt somewhat familiar to me, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it until I did. And it reminds me of Claw, which came out for the PC in around, I think Claw was released in 98, maybe?
Never even heard of
it. It's a platforming game for Windows. They might have released it for MS-DOS, but I remember getting the CD-ROM and playing it on Windows, back in the day, and it's the same sort of thing. It's a platformer with, questionable hitboxes, except for you're a cat. That's a captain, a pirate captain, and, he's seeking his revenge, and, platforming is the way to go. And, there are, some mechanics in that game that kind of harpen back here with the bubblegum mechanics and whatnot. If you have the ability to play old PC games, I definitely recommend you look into checking out Claw. Just be warned, it supports keyboard only, So unless you have a old Windows 95 PC or 98 PC with a serial port and an old like Microsoft Sidewinder, controller support is not going to work.
Okay, that sucks.
Believe me, I tried.
I actually do have a note Sidewinder storage.
So. There you go. So yeah. It is a fun game though, and it's Abandonware. There's a website where you can pick up Abandonware. It's available there. So, and it does have patches to work on Windows 10 and 11, I believe. So there's ways to play it. As far as this game goes, I will not discredit anybody or discourage anybody from trying to play this game. You should at least give this game a shot. Like I said, download the manual, just give that a look. It's 80 pages. It's a quick, breezy story. The artwork included is amazing. I thought the artwork was really good. And I really kind of want a comic book of this, to be honest. This would make a good, like, 4-issue miniseries for sure. I suggest at least checking it out and playing it. I don't think that you'll play it and come back to it. I think you'll agree with me, Greg. Like, we've played this. We would never go back to this again. Like, we've played it. We've seen all it has to offer. Like, there's no reason to ever pick this game up again. But we can suggest it because it was good enough to where we didn't feel like we wasted our time with it.
No, I do agree. It's definitely worth like playing because of the unique factors we already mentioned. So I think like, you know, at least I recommend that they're giving it a look. So, like, you know, for sure. So, so that's pretty much the game. In a nutshell. There is one code, one glitch in the game. There's a code you can use to give yourself like in-game hints, which basically are things the hints mostly apply to like trying to find the, you know, you're trying to find like those hard to find fantasy zones, for example. They probably added it to the game. It's part of the game debug feature. We're trying to test everything out to make sure that it worked correctly, and they never took it out. So. There's also a glitch you can do to get 99 lives in the game, like pretty easily too. So
which goes back to what I was saying before, like if you can get enough lives, this game's gonna be pretty easy.
Yes. So despite not being a major release, the game did get a number of views back in the day. As I already mentioned before, those views of the game were pretty middling. So they pretty much just said the same positive negatives about the game that we already said. For example, Game Cola gave it a 56%, Digital Press gave it like a 40%. Wizard gave it the average rating in the game appears to be around 60-70%. As far as the ratings go. So because of the fact it was not a major release, it's kind of cheap in card form, but definitely more pricey in CIB because of the fact that it's not a very popular game, but also because of the fact it wasn't produced in huge amounts. CIB copies can command like a pretty good penny. Mm. So, 35 copies of this game were game listed on eBay as we're doing the research. 12 copies of the game and so recently. Prices for the game, card only, these prices include shipping, they went anywhere from $18 to $22. You know, fairly cheap as far as Super NES a game goes.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But the only CIB copy is sold for $135. So definitely much more expensive to get than you want like complete.
Yeah, and so. Like I said when we started the podcast, obscure. It comes to anything obscure, especially with retro gaming, I expect at least over $100 to start. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, definitely, for sure. So, any final thoughts you want to say about the game?
I still stick to my theory that this was a failed comic book idea that was scrapped and turned into a video game. And I think, being what it is, it's all right. You should definitely seek it out and play it. But, I guess for $20, you can add it to your collection if you really wanted to. But, I mean, nowadays, $20, that ain't going to get you much. So maybe you should just spend it on this game. I was going to say it's not worth the $20, but to be fair, nowadays, yes, with inflation and everything else, the $20 for this game is actually a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I can agree with that. So, you like for sure. So, but okay. As always, we appreciate you. Appreciate all listeners out there that listen to the podcast. As always, mm-hmm. Sure. So as I said before, we're taking the holidays off. Like we'll record the first week of January or jam a new episode for you. And Joe, what game are we going to answer? And so Joe and I decided that we're going to cover Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island.
Yeah.
Like the episode. So one of the major heavy hitters of the game we've not covered yet. So,
and a game I haven't really played at all.
Well, it's on the NES. It's easily available. It's on the it's one of the games included on the NES and Mini, yep. And it's also. I think it's also on the Switch.
Yeah, it's on the Switch as well.
Yep. That's my thought. So yeah, easy to play. So, any questions, comments, feedback, etc. You can find us on Facebook. We're also a proud member, of the Geekgate Network. Be sure to check them out at geekgate.com, and they also have the Patreon as well. There are many great podcasts on there, both retro gaming and non-gaming related. Joe, if they want to reach you, how can they do that at?
You can find me on Twitter at joesux30. Also, I do a podcast called The Radical Retro Roundup, which I do with the former co-host from here, George. We're 2 episodes in. We're about to record the third one here in a couple weeks. So it's good. It's good so far. So, and it's good to be back, like, creating my own content. But also, Oh my God, I know why you pay for an editor, Greg, because having to listen to my own voice.
It takes a bit of used to.
Especially with, like, George and I can go on tangents, and I took out, like, all the... I used to be family-friendly, just so the audience knows, and I'm not anymore. So now it's, like, right. We get on tangents and everything else, so it's, like, they can get up to, like, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and so to sift through... Either A, sift through that stuff and cut it down, or go through it and make sure there's no, you know... glitches. It's been so trying. It's not even funny. We recorded, what was the last time we recorded? It was the end of, no. Yeah. It was just before Thanksgiving we recorded, and I just released the episode like last week. I just dreaded editing. So, it's one of those things, like, I love it. It's a great hobby. And I love podcasting. I love talking with you, you know, Greg, and, like, talking with George. It's fantastic. But it's, like, also, like, I didn't think about the whole editing part and everything else after.
Yes. Yeah, so, for sure.
You know, it's a cursing, a curse and a blessing. So that's been fun to bring that back, despite the hurdles.
Definitely, for sure.
So, yeah, you can find me on Twitter, and then also you can find Radical Retro Roundup on Twitter at Retro Roundup, Retro_Roundup. I don't post as often on there because my phone won't let me sign into 2 Twitter accounts, so I only access that Twitter account through my computer, and I'm rarely ever at my computer except for when I'm here recording this or editing. So, yeah, I don't post that much there. Horrible.
Fair enough.
I'm horrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's fair enough. So I understand. So, but. But, all right, so thank you again, everybody, for listening to us, as always. Thank you, Joe, for podcasting with me, as always. Appreciate it.
Of course.
So, hope everybody out there has a good holiday season. We'll catch you again. And we'll catch you again after the holidays.
Yep.
Stay safe, be well, and take care, everybody.
Happy holidays and happy 2023.
All right. Thank you. Take care, everybody.
Nintendo controls 80% of the video market. But no matter how you play the game or which game you play, things definitely have come a long way since Pac-Man.
Now you're playing with power. Deep Pong Power.